This is The Sweeper, the global football podcast with the best worldwide news and stories from the beautiful game, with Lee Wingate and Paul Watson.
On this episode of The Sweeper, we talk about the upcoming Virgin Derby in the Caribbean, a rare international outing for the Basque country and the Danish Superligaen's trademark heroics. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Sweeper, the podcast which brings you all the football news and stories you won't hear elsewhere. My name is Lee Wingate, my co-host is Paul Watson, and today we're going to be talking about some Danish heroics and Romanian rivalries, among other things. But before we do that, let's preview the March international window. We'll talk about your upcoming trip to Serravalle later, Paul. So let's start the episode with a game we're billing as the Virgin Derby. Tell us about that.
It's not as awful as it sounds. It is the US Virgin Islands and the British Virgin Islands are meeting in the start of the CONCACAF qualification for the World Cup. So it's basically two preliminary matches begin the CONCACAF qualification process with the lowest ranked teams in the region, but also some of the lowest ranked teams in the world taking part. So you have Anguilla against the Turks and Caicos Islands, and then you have the US Virgin Islands versus the British Virgin Islands, which we have dubbed the Virgin Derby. I'm pretty sure they don't like to call it that. And that is going to be a really fascinating tie between these two islands that are about 70 kilometers apart. The ferry takes about 45 minutes to get from one to the other. And it's one of those derbies that I would say it's probably one of the least known derbies in world football. It's not going to be a bitter, angry sort of fan storming the pitch kind of derby, but it nonetheless is a derby with some history to it.
Who are we expecting to win?
Personally, I'm expecting the British Virgin Islands to win it. So the reason that the two teams are playing each other is that there was a sort of seeding system. So for the bottom four nations in CONCACAF, they played sort of the bottom team against the fourth bottom and the second and the third bottom against each other. So actually the bottom team are Anguilla, Turks and Caicos fourth, and then British Virgin Islands and US Virgin Islands next to each other in the rankings. But what has changed in the British Virgin Islands is that they've had this incredible run where they've gone from, at one point, I think they hadn't won a game in 11 years. Granted, they hadn't played as many games. So it sounds terrible when you hear that. But compared to UEFA nations, for example, they play so many fewer games that actually it wasn't as bad as it sounded, but it wasn't brilliant. They broke this 11-year hoodoo. They beat Turks and Caicos 3-1. They then drew with Turks and Caicos again and drew with Dominica, who are like a much higher ranked team. So there's a real feeling that the British Virgin Islands are on the up, whereas the US Virgin Islands, there's not been an awful lot to sort of latch onto for them recently. So I would actually go with the British Virgin Islands. And that's not just my Britishness speaking. It's more that the US Virgin Islands have shown few signs of progress, except for a 2-2 draw with the Cayman Islands. That was a pretty impressive one in the Nations League. But beyond that, they've generally been sort of pretty much on a level, whereas the British Virgin Islands brought in Chris Kawamya, quite a kind of well-known face of 90s football, and just seemed to make some really good progress.
To give the listeners a bit of geographical context, both of these countries are in the Caribbean, right? And they're pretty close together, as far as I understand it. Are they close enough to have a sort of UK to Scilly Isles style helicopter between the two of them?
Ah, that's a good point. Well, I imagine so, because it's a 40-minute ferry journey, which would probably make it a very quick helicopter hop over between the islands. I would love to know. What's amazing, though, is that, I mean, probably pretty obvious, but you're going from a British territory to an American one. So there's this immediate switch that takes place, even though the distance is so tiny. For example, the US Virgin Islands play at the brilliantly named Bethlehem Soccer Stadium. And immediately when you switch from British Virgin Islands to US, you go from football to soccer in the terminology. But you also encounter this difference that in the US Virgin Islands, American sports are seen as more important, whereas the British Virgin Islands, football is still, you know, very much king. So it's a really interesting thing that this switch of a tiny distance, certainly a distance that you would be looking to helicopter, Lee, I'm sure, given your newfound love of helicopter journeys. But still, there is obviously a shift, like a cultural shift and a rivalry there.
Do you know why they are called the Virgin Islands, by the way?
I could suggest some, but I think we'd have to tick that box for content, censored content. No, do you know?
I do, yeah. I saw a little YouTube video on it. They are called the Virgin Islands because when Christopher Columbus discovered them in 1493, he named them the Virgin Islands based on the legend of Saint Ursula, who was a British princess who was engaged to a man of high regard in Rome, and she went on a pilgrimage to meet him. And on her journey from Britain to Europe, she reportedly built up a following of fellow virgins, and they were all massacred on the return journey home after refusing to sleep with the Huns in Cologne. And that is the legend of Saint Ursula and the virgins. And for some reason, Christopher Columbus decided to name these islands that he discovered after that particular incident in history.
Oh, wow. God, there are some weird names, aren't there? I mean, I thought that was going to be a much more uplifting story than it was. It certainly took a dark turn. I didn't really know any of the history behind it. I still don't really massively know why it is that one is British and one is American. I don't know whether that sort of has been a point of contention over the years. But it is interesting that I would say that of all the derbies in football, in international football, this is one that's been played a fair few times. But I think very few people know it exists. It's actually been played 8 times over the years, and it's at a suitably tense point where they've both won 3 and there have been 2 draws. So it's exactly evenly matched over the years. It's a fascinating thing that this derby's taking place, and it's another example of a World Cup campaign that for these nations could boil down to one two-legged match and a total amount of travelling of about, you know, 70 kilometres of travel, and you could be out of the World Cup that quickly. Obviously, the winner goes through to a group stage, but for the loser, this is do or die, really.
Did you know that Andre Villas-Boas started his coaching career in the British Virgin Islands?
I did know this because when I was in Pompeii, there was this very spurious thing about me being dubbed, you know, the youngest football manager. And actually, one of the things that flew against that is that I believe Andre Villas-Boas was in the British Virgin Islands, was actually younger than I was when I was in Pompeii. But the technicality, which again, continued my spurious claim, was that I think he was the technical director of the British Virgin Islands rather than the actual coach or manager. I believe that's the case. So we're going way back now. We're going back to like 2000 at the time. I don't know why. Do you have any idea why he started out there? Because it didn't seem particularly like it would make a lot of sense for him to be there.
A lack of honesty, it seems, is what got him there, because he didn't tell them how old he was. So I saw an interview in The Independent, and he said, "I was basically the country's coach. I was a kid, but they didn't know that. I only told them my age the day I left the post. It was such a grand job for a 21-year-old.
That's absolutely amazing. It actually reminds me of a similar story, that this is one of my favourite ever stories. Now, this wasn't intentional deceit, but do you ever hear about when Seychelles appointed the wrong Andrew Morrison? Have you ever heard this story?
No, but I'd love to.
So there's a coach called Andrew Amers Morrison, and he was kind of a youth coach, community coach, doing really good work in London. He was suddenly appointed the manager of the Seychelles national football team when he went there on holiday. And Seychelles officials, they believed he was the ex-Man City player, Andrew Morrison, who has actually been sort of coaching, I think, Sri Lanka. He's the head coach of Sri Lanka now and has had various coaching jobs. And so they appointed this guy as their national coach and then realised he wasn't the Andy Morrison they believed he was. And so you think this would have been the end of the matter, but they offered him a 2-year contract initially. And instead of saying, no, that's all off, they just reduced it to 6 months. So they still gave him the job. Then 2 weeks later, they sacked him without him actually getting to a game because, in quotations, they could no longer be certain he was the right person to head the coaching staff of a national team. I mean, it's one of the best stories I've ever heard, that this guy on holiday just gets given the job. And then it's more the way they sacked him was so funny, as if it was his fault. You know, oh, I don't think you're still the right man.
I mean, we were looking a couple of episodes ago, weren't we, to explain why the Seychelles were already ruled out of AFCON. I guess if they can't even appoint people that have a football background, that doesn't really bode well for their participation in any tournaments going forward. Let's switch now from one international topic to another. We're going to talk about the Basque country. Tell us about their upcoming game.
The Basque country are playing Uruguay in Bilbao on March 23rd. It's going to be the first game in 4 years for the Basque team. Now, I imagine people will know various amounts of this, but it's worth reiterating that in Spain, you have teams for Catalonia and for the Basque country, and they are allowed to play matches within certain windows. So the Spanish FA allows them to compete as those entities, but only at set times. And if they broke that, for example, say they decided they wanted to play a fixture in a non-recognised window, then the players would face disciplinary action. It would be like a really big problem. So you get these representative teams. And obviously, being the Basque country, it's got an amazing wealth of talent to pick from. So this Basque squad that they've picked probably would hold its own against UEFA Nations. Like if we can post a link maybe somewhere to the squad list, but it, you know, it's got Nico and Iñaki Williams in there, Kepa in goal. I mean, it's like, this is a really strong team, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this game plays out. But also it's going to be really interesting to see how this ties in with a slightly growing movement in the Basque Federation recently, that they actually do want to join UEFA, and that they're not happy with this window being their only chance to express this Basque identity. There is certainly a divide, but there is a sense that perhaps there's more of a push lately that they would like to be in UEFA, which doesn't seem very likely, but you know, certainly is something that they're going to explore.
My initial thought there was that I was really surprised that the Spanish FA allow this to happen at all, because I know the sensitivity around the push for independence by the Basque country and by Catalonia and the pushback from Spain. So I'm really surprised that that is allowed at all. And on a footballing note, I guess my main curiosity is, what happens if a player gets called up by Spain and, say, the Basque country in the same international window? Are they then like obliged to pick Spain, or is there any repercussion if they pick the Basque country?
I had imagined that they don't clash, but they do, I suppose, because they're international windows. I would imagine there would be an unwritten rule that you would choose Spain rather than the Basque team. And I suppose for the player, there's a sense that, like, that's for your career going to be the better option, isn't it? Because this Basque team only gets a game. As we say, this is their first game in 4 years. So there's not really much future in that. However nice it is to represent your identity, you don't want to miss out on a World Cup because you did it. So I imagine Spain tends to win out when they clash. But as for the UEFA thing, I get the impression that for the Spanish FA, this is a controlled way to keep these identities effectively on a leash and try and prevent any kind of bottled up explosion of saying, look, actually, we're going to go to UEFA. I think it's probably a way of giving them a concession. But I don't know if it's necessarily working, because last December 2020, in fact, there was an attempt by the Basque Federation to engage UEFA and FIFA and say, actually, we want to be in. It didn't seem to meet with any positive response, which is no surprise at all, because UEFA has made clear that it is a closed shop now for anything but fully sovereign states. So I can't see any realistic future in which a Basque team gets into UEFA as a nation, effectively. But I think it will remain quite a sensitive subject, because there'll always be those for whom this is just not enough, really.
Why do you think that they are not going down the CONIFA route? Because we've talked about CONIFA recently. This is an organization for nation states and peoples not recognized by FIFA. Would this not be perfect for them?
I think the quality of the players means it's not quite suitable. So players at this level are not necessarily going to want to play at CONIFA level, which tends to be, with the greatest respect, players of sort of semi-pro and often amateur status. The thought of unleashing, you know, some of these players that the BAS team have got on those kind of teams, it just wouldn't be a particularly useful experience. I also think there's a sense that if you want to be in UEFA, some teams see that it might even harm their credibility to be in CONIFA, because what it does is it puts you on a par with the other teams in CONIFA. It's like saying, well, we're one of these. Now, CONIFA currently has, for example, Padania, who are a regional identity for the north of Italy. But nobody on earth, don't even think the Padanians, believe Padania is going to get into UEFA. So in a way, if Basque Country did say, look, we're going to go into CONIFA, it would be like saying, yeah, we accept that FIFA is not a route for us. And I feel like they don't want to be compared to Padania. They want to be compared to Andorra or Luxembourg or, you know, those. And that's why I think when they play Uruguay, there's a sense of, look, here we are competing against a fully fledged FIFA nation. On an identity level, they identify more with those kind of places. And on a footballing level, this team is more suitable for playing against a team with Marcelo Bielsa in charge than with, you know, the greatest respect, you know, a semi-pro team from you know, somewhere in Europe with an amateur coach.
I'm curious to see how they do against Uruguay anyway. That would be interesting one to follow. That one is, I think you said the 23rd of March, right? That one's taking place?
Yep, that one is on the 23rd of March. And I'm not sure if it'll be watchable anywhere. It's worth Googling around on that one. It's possible they'll put it on TV somewhere. I know there's a lot of interest, obviously, because Marcelo Bielsa is in charge of Uruguay and he's returning to Bilbao where he coached and I think remains very popular. So you might find there's a stream somewhere from Spain that you can pick up, I think.
Let's move on now to our final story in this segment, and that is about Ildefonso Lima. We've talked about him a lot on this podcast before. He holds a number of international records, the longest international career in men's football at 26 years, the oldest player to ever appear in a UEFA Euro qualifier at 43 years old, and only the third European footballer to be capped in four different decades after Billy Meredith and Jari Litmanen. He is a legend of the game, especially in sweeper circles. And he was also recently the subject of a question on the German version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? This was a question to win €16,000, I believe, and it was 11 goals in 137 international caps. Ildefonso Lima, who ended his career in 2023, is the record goal scorer for which nation? A, Spain, B, Mexico, C, Colombia, or D, Andorra?
Come on. I mean, 16,000, that's the easiest money you're ever going to make there. It's one of those ones where when you live in the world we live in, it's one of the stupidest questions you could be asked. It's so obvious. But I guess if you're not a sweeper sort of person, you might not know that, I guess.
Yeah, there were a few people that were commenting on his Twitter post saying, oh my God, how obvious is this answer? Which of those countries is only going to have a record goal scorer with 11 goals? And he was quite justifiably saying, well, I'm a defender from Andorra, so 11 is quite good, which is very much a fair point. But Paul, this obviously got me thinking, could I spring a surprise game of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on Paul in this episode? And so that is what's about to happen now. I've got five questions for you that you've got to get through. Who Wants to Be a Millionaire style questions. You've also got three lifelines. So you've got a 50-50. You've got an Ask the Audience, and our patrons have already voted on the answers for these questions. So you can consult them for your Ask the Audience. And you've got a phone a friend, who is our Patreon competition winner, Joe McTaggart. He's waiting on the line in case you need to call him and ask for his help. So are you ready to play?
I am ready to play. What I am stunned about is that you've managed to spring the budget. Where have you got £1 million from? I'm over the moon, really. I'm quite nervous, but you know, this is life-changing for me.
Yeah, I might not actually pay you, but for podcast entertainment, we will play. So, question one.
Yeah.
And remember, you can use any of your lifelines at any time. Question one, which of the following is not the name of a South American football club? A, Liverpool, B, Everton, C, Barcelona, D, Aston Villa.
Oh, God.
This game is so much easier when there's nothing at stake. Well, I know there's a... So you said Liverpool and Everton. There's definitely... There are Liverpools and Evertons. I know that. I'm pretty sure there's not an Aston Villa, but there is an Aston Villa club. It's just, I think they're in the Caribbean. So you said South American, didn't you? Am I going to blow your millionaire with the first question? But there is an Aston Villa, but it is definitely not in South America. It's a Caribbean nation. So I'm going to say Aston Villa.
Yeah, you're very much correct with your reasoning. Yeah, Barcelona are in Ecuador.
Oh, see, I hadn't heard of them. That was quite a nervy one. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay, I haven't ruined your segment immediately.
No, not yet. Which team has won the most African Champions Leagues? A, Al Ahly, B, Zamalek, C, Raja Casablanca, or D, Esperance Tunis?
Al Ahly.
Oh, he's flying, absolutely. Yeah.
And I know that because I researched it for literally our last pod. Otherwise, I would have been here thinking, oh, they all sound possible.
Paul, you're 3 questions away from an imaginary £1 million. And you've still got all your lifelines. So, question 3. What is the third Prague club in the Czech top flight? Is it A, Karvina, B, Bohemians, C, Jablonets, or D, Pardubice?
Ooh, so do you mean... Are there more than the 3 clubs? So in terms of, am I guessing which one is like the third best Prague club? Or is it that there are 3 Prague clubs? I know Bohemians are from Prague, but I don't know whether there's another Prague club in this 4. And we're trying to say which one's the third best club out of them.
No, so there's Sparta Slavia and one of those 4.
Yeah, Bohemians, definitely Bohemians. Again, like we were very close to their stadium the other day. So I'm going with it.
All right, he's flying. Yeah, he's through to question 4. No lifelines needed at all so far. Question 4. What is UEFA's newest member state? Kazakhstan, Montenegro, Kosovo, or Gibraltar?
Oh, no. Now, this is where it gets awkward. Because I would say it's Gibraltar, but Kazakhstan are quite new. I think it's Gibraltar, though, because Gibraltar were never allowed in. Like, that they were only in on a technicality. And I'm sure that was recent, because after that, they slammed the door shut. But in the spirit of the game, I'm going to 50-50 it.
Okay, so 50-50, that means that I will take away Montenegro and Gibraltar. So UEFA's newest member state is either Kazakhstan or Kosovo.
Oh, wow. Oh, God, thank God I didn't go for Gibraltar. That would have been the end of the game. Oh, so you're saying it's either Kazakhstan?
Mm-hmm. Kazakhstan or Kosovo. And this could be a great moment to call up Joe McTaggart, couldn't it, really? Or you can ask the audience.
Oh, I have a suspicion on this one, because this is where it's really confusing, right? So Kazakhstan joined AFC. No, it's got to be Kosovo, because Kazakhstan switched, but it was like quite a while ago. We did this recently. No, I'm going with Kosovo, because Kosovo played only their first game relatively recently. They played, I think, did they play Haiti in a friendly? And before that, they hadn't even had a recognised national team. I'm going with Kosovo. I really believe this. It's Kosovo.
The correct answer is Kosovo, yeah.
Oh, God. I was really nervous there.
So, Kazakhstan, 2002. Montenegro, 2007. Gibraltar, 2013. Kosovo, 2016.
Oh, see, I really thought it was Gibraltar before I 50-50'd. Oh, my God. That was a great bit of millionaire. Okay. This is the big one. Oh, God.
This is what the people are tuning in for. The edge of the seat entertainment.
Yeah.
The final question to win an imaginary £1 million. Which top flight European football club is the furthest away from their closest opponent? A, Las Palmas. B, Tromso. C, Baltika Kaliningrad. Or D, Oulu.
What's D?
Oulu in Finland.
Oh, this is a horrible question. This is such a Lee Wingate question. Like, all of those could be the answer. What have I got left? I've got Ask the Audience. And so that would give us what the patrons have said, right?
Yes.
Al McTaggart on the line. I'm in a strong position here. Right, I'm going to ask the audience first of all.
Okay, let me pull that up right now. This is your audience vote. The audience have said 52% Las Palmas, 10% Tromso, 33% Baltika Kaliningrad and 5% Ulu.
You see, my instinct was Las Palmas. And so that's quite heartening. The one that scared me was Kaliningrad. That scared me because I was like, Russia can be as big as it wants to. Like, Russia is huge. So there's that potential. I think I would be crazy not to call McTaggart, though. I've got the lead. I'm on a million. Why would I not call Joe McTaggart? Joe, the Encyclopedia McTaggart. I've got to call him.
Call him then and put him on speakerphone.
Brilliant. Right. I'm going to call McTaggart. So.
Hello, Paul.
Joe McTaggart. This is Paul Watson calling from The Sweeper. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. I don't want to put you under any undue pressure. I hope you're sitting comfortably. Joe, I'm on a million. I need your help for the million.
No. Oh, no. Right, okay.
I know. But I believe you're the man for the job. So here's the question. Right. Here it is, Joe. Which top flight European football club is furthest away from its closest opponent? Now, is it Las Palmas, Tromso, Baltika Kaliningrad, or Ulu from Finland?
Right. Straight away, I'm thinking Las Palmas.
Yeah.
But I think Kaliningrad could be a good choice as well.
That's exactly what I said.
Yeah. I know for a fact Las Palmas is one of the longest that you can get. But Kaliningrad just sounds so wild that it's got to be up there as well.
Yeah, I was scared by the Russia thing. Like, Russia's huge. Joe, I think your instincts are the same as mine. I've got to go Las Palmas. If it's not Las Palmas, the audience said Las Palmas too, but I thought I've got to go to you. You're the kind of guy that would know this.
I hate the confidence that you're putting in me, Paul. Yeah, I'd go for Las Palmas. That's what I'm saying.
Lee, we're locking in Las Palmas, Lee.
All right, with Joe on the line, I can tell you the answer is Las Palmas. You've won 1 million.
Thank you very much, Joe.
It's all right. It was a pleasure.
Joe, I will be in touch about the details of how I transfer you some of that million. 50%. We'll talk, Joe. I'll talk to Leo. I'll get back to you on that. Thanks, Joe.
Cheers, Paul. Take care.
Bye. Oh, my God. I really thought it was Las Palmas, but it was so good to have that reassurance. I suddenly wobbled when you said Kaliningrad. Ulu would have been a wild one because I've never even heard of them.
You were racing through those questions there. So I'm glad that we did get some use out of the lifelines towards the end. But anyway, you are the winner of an imaginary million. So we're going to take a quick break now. You can have a think about how you're going to spend it. And we'll be back in just a second for a trip around Europe. Welcome back to part two of the Sweeper podcast, and we're going to be talking in this segment about a couple of stories from across Europe, Denmark and Romania being the countries involved. And we're going to talk about the unlikely heroics from Denmark first, who have thrown an absolute spanner in the works for the Super League. Have you seen this story popping up on social media, Paul?
I've actually not seen it at all. No, when you mentioned there was a Super League Denmark story, I thought, I'll let Lee tell me about this.
So, I shall. Basically, what's happened is the European Super League, which I think we've established none of us want this, neither you nor I nor any of our listeners, tried to register the European Super League name as a trademark with the European Union's Intellectual Property Office. But the Superliga, the Danish Superliga, got there first and has actually registered the Super League as its own trademark. The Intellectual Property Office have sided with the Danish Superliga, which means that the European Super League is basically going to be forced to rebrand, essentially. So they have completely derailed the name of the Super League.
That's fantastic. What a win. What a win for football that is. Amazing stuff. I actually didn't realise you couldn't have more than one Super League. It seemed to me like it's the kind of name that, you know, it's relatively generic and you could have more than one Super League, but apparently not.
This is my question and something that I'm actually a bit unclear about, because there are, in total across Europe, there are 9 Super Leagues of the 55 UEFA nations. There are 9 Super Leagues. You have the Greek Super League, the Kosovan Superliga, the Moldovan Superliga, the Romanian Superliga, the Serbian Superliga, the Slovak Superliga, the Swiss Super League, and the Turkish Super League. I'm kind of none the wiser as to why they are all allowed to coexist, and yet the Danish Super League and the European Super League can't coexist with that name. I guess it has something to do with maybe that others haven't filed trademark requests. It could be that, but it's pretty unclear to me, but I just love it anyway. I really like that some unlikely heroes have emerged from Denmark for this.
What I'd like to see happen is them appeal it and then the Moldovan Super League beat them in court as well. Just get beaten by repeated Super Leagues. Now, that's a great thing. As you say, I'm sure it must be the trademarking. You're right. If you try and use the term World Cup in relation to football, I'm pretty sure FIFA can stop you. In fact, I know they can because we did with CONIFA's World Cup. So it must be something to do with ownership of certain terms within the football sphere for trademark purposes. So it's not like you can't call your league the Super League, but I guess, yeah, it's I don't understand this intellectual property very well, but that's a great win for Denmark. And again, striking a blow for proper football.
The Superliga chief executive, Klaus Thompson, said in a statement, "We are very happy that the EU's trademark authority has agreed that the trademark the Super League in the EU will violate the value that the Danish clubs have invested in the 3F Superliga. We have always been against the big clubs' desire for a new European league. We believe there must be openness and qualification for international club tournaments via national competitions. Football should not be a closed party for clubs that do not dare to participate in an open competition. So, of course, we are extra happy about this victory outside the pitch." I'm not sure he could have put a statement better. Could we have phrased that any better?
That's beautiful, isn't it? And that goes beyond just this legal case. That's a very clear line in the sand saying, like, enough of this nonsense. I mean, I guess Denmark's a really good example of a place that would suffer from the European Super League's plans. You know, it's a nation with a very strong footballing pedigree, huge traditions in the sport, brilliantly supported clubs. And yet, in the eyes of this sort of breakaway band, they would be effectively closed out from European football. So, yeah, I'm not surprised that they're fiercely passionate about this, but it's lovely to hear it.
Do you have any favourite league names around the world or around Europe? Because we've got a lot of Super Leagues, we've got some national leagues, we've got two Bundesliga, which is really boring. That just translates to the Federal League. So very boring stuff. Have you got any sort of favourite or least favourite football league names around the world?
I always like Luxembourg's second division, which is called the League of Honour, isn't it? The Division of Honour.
Yes.
Which I just think's great. I just think that's great.
Do you not think that sounds so much better than the actual Top Flight, which for me wins the award of does what it says on the tin name? It's the Luxembourg National League.
Yeah. And because of the National League connotation, I guess in the UK, in England, the National League is the non-league, isn't it? It's the system that sits below the professional leagues. Somehow the division of honour just sounds better. It sounds like that's actually a step up.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So, yeah, any other favourite ones around the world?
I can't think of one off the top of my head. No, there's an awful lot of Premier Leagues, aren't there, around the world?
And yeah.
Have you got a good one?
I like the Eliteserien in Norway, the Elite Series, or the Allsvenskan in Sweden. I think that just means the All-Swedish, which is also very much does what it says in the tin.
Yeah, the Allsvenskan's cool, isn't it? I think sometimes they just sound better for being in a different language. Like the Eredivisie always sounds really cool in Holland as well. But, you know, it just means the first division, right, I think.
Mm. Well, shall we move on now to another Super League? That is in Romania, because we've got a story about a coach that just keeps coming back for more. Tell us about Nicolo Napoli.
Nicolo Napoli has returned to FCU Craiova for what will be his 10th spell with the club. From my research, I can't see anyone who has managed that with any other club. There is a technicality here. I'll put the asterisk in because for the pedants amongst us or for the pub quiz regulars, this is worth noting. It's actually only his ninth. It's a mere nine as coach because one of those spells was as director of football. What I find really fascinating. So this is an Italian right back. He's from Palermo. Moved to Romania sort of early in his coaching career in 2004 and has basically coached and been sacked by FCU Craiova like at kind of almost 4 to 6 monthly intervals. So he seems to do like about 4 months with the club, gets sacked, usually goes somewhere else for just a very short spell and then comes back again, and has been doing this for just, you know, years now, absolutely years. And he's just returned for this 10th spell, and he's well on the way to being sacked again because he lost his first game too Universitatia Craiova, which is the bitter rivals of FCU Craiova. So it's a hell of a first game to take on, is against the club that believe they are the rightful version of your club. So that these two clubs both believe they are the proper Universitatia Craiova, a club who were pretty big in Romania in the 90s and then went through a series of like difficult transitions. And they took each other on, and yeah, Universitatia won 2-1, beating Nicola Napoli in his first game. So I would argue he's probably about three or four games from the sack, and then he can take his 11th spell probably before the end of the season.
It's funny, isn't it, how in Bulgaria and Romania and just in Southeast Europe in general, it seems to be the capital of these sort of clubs that have split identities. So we've got the two CSKA Sofias, you've also got the two Steaua Bucharest, which I think is an absolutely wild story as well. It's funny, it just seems to be like a hotbed of clubs that, you know, have split into two. I just find that really fascinating. Now we've got then the Sofia derby, we have the Craiova derby. At the moment, we don't have the Bucharest derby between the two entities because the other Steaua Bucharest cannot be promoted from the second division as it stands at the moment because they are owned, I think, by the Ministry of Defence. And to be promoted to the Romanian top flight, you have to have at least some private ownership. But if that changes, we could have a derby there as well. And it just seems to be a Bulgarian and Romanian thing.
Yeah, and I think the general simplified version of why this happens is that you have a traditionally powerful club and then they fall upon hard times financially, capitulate, and rather than disappearing, there are often loopholes which allow the club to continue. So I think in the case of CSK Sofia, they bought the identity or at least the league license of a team from Lovech, Litit Lovech in Bulgaria. So effectively just carried on as if nothing had happened, but as the same entity, but they had effectively gone bankrupt. And so it's from this kind of situation where the fans then often say, well, look, this isn't how it should be done. You know, this isn't our club anymore. And then set up an alternative Phoenix club that kind of come from the very bottom of the structure. And because obviously these clubs have a huge support, they're often some of the powerhouses of their regional football, they can quite quickly get promoted through the leagues because they are starting in a position where they have, you know, thousands of fans and people that want this club to succeed. So they can just usually get up the leagues very fast and then meet their bitter rivals in that top flight. So I think it's a symptom of football breaking down a little bit. It's a symptom of mismanagement of clubs and this thing of at what point does a club stop being the original club? You know, what point are you no longer? We've discussed this with various clubs like the Red Bull phenomenon and Salzburg. And at what point are you just no longer the club that you started out as? And when that happens, I think supporters will set up something that they see as the real club and are willing to put that time and effort to bring them back to where they think they should be.
You mentioned there you don't think anyone has had more spells in charge of a single club than Nicolò Napoli. I did put this out to the patrons because there are obviously quite a few incidences of coaches that keep going back to their former clubs. As Sam said on Discord, Salvador González Marco, known as Voro, his managerial career has had 11 roles and they've all been with Valencia. One in charge of the B team, three as a caretaker, four as interim, two as assistant, and one brief spell as senior coach.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I like that. I remembered Martin Allen at Barnet was always a joke that whenever Barnet sacked their manager, Martin Allen would get like an auto call, you know, like his phone automatically rings and he just comes in. He's only done five spells though.
I've got another one from the Discord. A transponster says Emeric Yenai, also a Romanian. He had seven spells in charge of Steaua Bucharest, although I think the first one was as an assistant. And he was also the manager that guided Romania to the last eight at Euro 2000 at England's expense. So, yeah, he did stick in my mind for that as well.
Still, no one going close to 10, though, right? I mean, this is still like 10 is astonishing. When I saw it, I did have to go back through and check all of these out because I just couldn't quite believe you could rack 10 up.
I'm sure we'll be bringing you an update in about 2 weeks, as you say, to say that he's been sacked again. But we'll leave it there for our stories today. By the time this episode goes out, we are recording it a little bit early, but by the time it goes out, you will be in San Marino and I will be in New York and we're both going to see games. You're going to see San Marino take on St. Kitts and Nevis in the first of their doubleheader. and you are going along with your brother, aren't you? Your comedian brother, Mark Watson.
Yeah, and if you ever want to make a trip and know that it's going to go smoothly, definitely travel with a comedian. Yeah, it's really nice. So yeah, Mark Watson, some of you will know him from his sort of TV work and his radio work. That's my brother, and we sort of always bonded as kids. Like, the thing that we would always do is watch football and Bristol City, but also we just had this passionate desire for the underdog. And so this is really nice that he's found he is able to do this trip with me, but we have to travel on the day of the game. I had planned to go out the night before, stay in Bologna, which is what I did last time, and just sort of make the leisurely trip over. But this time we're on an early Ryanair flight. So let's just keep fingers crossed that, first of all, Ryanair do their job, and then second of all, San Marino do their job.
I'm going to share a story now very much at my own expense, but one of the patrons on Discord yesterday found out that one of us had a famous comedian brother, which is, of course, you with your brother, Mark Watson. But Andy, our patron, wrote on the Discord, "I found out quite a cool fact today from my brother. Apologies if this has been discussed, but does anyone know that one of the pod's host's brother is a famous comedian?" And one of the other patrons has simply put a picture of me next to Alan Carr, the comedian Alan Carr, who, for those of you who don't know, is a very flamboyant UK talk show host. He's a very sociable guy, very nice guy. I do find him a little bit annoying sometimes. Wasn't the most ideal comparison, but I did laugh. And yeah, I'm currently at home visiting family, and they all found it very funny as well.
Well, you know what? Here's an aside. I'm pretty sure that Alan Carr, his dad was a football coach, I think. At least, I think so. And that he had this weird relationship with football. I think his dad managed a fair few like lower league English teams, and so it was believed he'd be brought up to sort of have a career in football or be a football guy, and then his career obviously went in a very different direction.
As I say, I'll be in New York, and I have managed to get accreditation to go see New York City versus Toronto in the MLS. I made a bit of a mistake with this, Paul, because I looked at the fixture dates on Soccerway, saw that it was on Sunday, and I'm flying on Saturday. So I thought, oh, it'd be fine. The game's on Sunday. But it was at 12:30 CET in the morning, which means it's actually on Saturday evening in the US. So I'm basically flying, taking my stuff to the hotel, and then going straight to the Yankee Stadium to watch the game.
What I love about this is this trip isn't a football trip. It's just, you know, you're just on holiday. And then the first thing you're going to do is just dash to a football match as soon as you land. You're never off the clock, are you?
No, it's very sweeper as well, though, for a first fixture. So the Yankee Stadium is a baseball stadium, and it's a game between two clubs from different countries, the US and Canada. So, yeah, for me, it was perfect. So, yeah, we're going to have on the next pod some really good live experiences to talk about. San Marino and New York, they probably couldn't be more contrasting. We'll catch you for another episode on Wednesday, the 27th of March.